Welcome to a new edition of the Famous Interviews with Joe Dimino. On this episode, we talk with entrepreneur, Podmatch and PodPros software founder and host, Alex Sanfilippo. He has been instrumental in creating a cutting-edge service that matches podcast guests and hosts together for interviews. He started his first business at the age of 10 selling golf balls. He has retained and grown that entrepreneurial spirit throughout his career. After 15 years in corporate America, he decided to pursue his real dream of podcasting full-time. It all came to fruition during the early go of the 2020 pandemic, and it's grown ever since. We probe the positivity of podcasting, his life and business, and so much more. Enjoy this interview.
Well, hey, Alex, first, before we get into this, I just want you to know, I don't know how you found me, but I am enormously grateful to you for opening me up to this community and branching out and meeting wonderful people around the planet.
Oh, thank you so much. That means so much to me. Thank you for saying that. Really appreciate that. I'm really glad to have you, too. I've been listening to I was listening to some of your interviews. Blank on the guy's name, the one I was listening to today, but just so you have some very fascinating stories, and you have a great voice for podcasting, and I feel like you know what you're doing. I don't know how long you've been doing this, but you definitely know what you're doing, which is cool to hear as well.
Well, thank you, and it's so good to have a good captain. You're so good with interfacing and getting all of this together and building the community. So yeah, I mean, this has been something that I've been doing since 2011, just kind of on the jazz realm when I started doing the show. I wanted to get the history and story straight from the musician instead of reading books and having secondhand accounts. So it kind of branched out. So it was kind of kismet when you got a hold of me. It's like, I've always thought I'd like to kind of venture out, and there's so many wonderful people that are in this community, and there's just so many people on this planet that are doing things that you just don't know about.
Yeah. You know,
and it's great to be connected. But I think before we get into your life and how you got involved with this 100% venture of doing podcasting, I'm seeing podcasting as an outgrowth of kind of healing a division that we have as a people in this country. It's a really good way of us upping our empathy and understanding things in a way. It's almost like therapy. Have you thought about it that way?
Oh, I definitely have, because I mean, it gives you the opportunity to hear an unbiased opinion about something or somebody's real experience without any filter being on it. And that to me is how people learn and grow. And if you want to talk about some of that today, I'm all for that, because I think that I'm seeing a lot of that. So for me, when there's like an issue that I don't know how I feel about it, I used to turn on the TV, but I've just found it so polarizing. Like on either, like I'm not trying to get political, but on either side, you're just going to hear exactly what someone wants you to think. I'd rather hear someone's real life story about how something affected them, so I can kind of, like, I don't know, get into the feeling of it versus just, this is how you think. Stop thinking any other way, right? I want to actually hear somebody, and I feel like it does. It creates a lot of empathy, because you realize it's like, oh, wow, that's why this person feels that way. Like, they actually struggle with that. I'm going on a little rant there, but yeah, I totally agree with you. I think podcasting has done a huge service, specifically in the United States, and I'm hoping the world at some point.
Well, and I think that's the thing that's fascinating about this, is that the only way that we're going to heal a fractured, you know, I'm only going to think this way or that way, is to find that place in the middle. And I know when I talk to people that, you know, I don't necessarily run with or have known in my life, I find this way where I'm like, wow, there's such a backstory with this that it's indelible. And it really makes me believe, no matter how high up somebody is, whether it's fame or notoriety, or if it's just a regular person, we all operate on the same level. We're getting up, we get a coffee, we have a schedule, we do things, and we feel things, we have families, we have friends. And I think that common ground, and when we intersperse that with story, it just makes us all say, you know what, we're all doing the exact same thing, and we can find some common ground.
100%. I mean, I completely agree with you. I've never had anyone bring that up before, so I'm really happy. Like, that's one of my main purposes of being in podcasting, is to help more of that happen. So it's really great to hear somebody else bring it up. I mean, I thank you for bringing that. I mean, I agree with you 100% on that.
And I've been bringing that up with a lot of people in the Podmatch community. You know, do you see, because a lot of people started doing this around the time the pandemic started. And one thing I will tell you, that morning after, it was probably the 14th of March, I remember I have a special needs son, and he loves two things more than anything else. He loves baseball, and he loves school. And when this happened, I was like, what am I going to do? And I remember just having a hard time listening to the radio. I listened to a jazz station out of San Francisco, and I just couldn't listen to anything. And I thought, what am I going to do? And what I decided to do was to do my interviews on speaker for my son and then my stepdaughter, who's on the other side, neurotypical. And I would play these interviews, and these musicians were overwhelmingly positive and optimistic. And I ramped up and did more interviews than I ever did before. And they would listen to them with me from people all over the world. And it was a way for them to see how I love doing this. But I think what I'm trying to get to here is, I noticed that when you really set up Pod Pros and Pod Match, you did this during a time of deep uncertainty when a pandemic was settling into America.
Yes, and that wasn't, like, we just saw the need, and not that we tried to rush through it, like, we did our best to do it with high quality, but we just saw the need the world had, and did our best to help it out, right? Like, we wanted to help, we wanted to be part of the solution, not the problem, so we just were like, this is something that people are looking for, we need to get it out here as quick as we can, and we probably launched a little earlier, like, we didn't even have a logo or anything, but we're like, man, it's not serving anybody sitting in our back pocket, right? Like, we've got to actually get this thing out there, so, yeah, we got it out there, and right away, we started getting really cool testimonies from people getting the opportunity on both sides of the mic to really leave an impact and an impression on other people's lives, which, again, that was the whole purpose of it.
And I think in the beginning when podcasting started, everybody was like, what's a podcast? Or
I know, I was.
Right. And it's like, what does it mean? It's like, well, people have these portable digital devices, and it's just a way of putting things out there. And I think there was a lot of slipshod stuff that was going on in the beginning, and then it got refined, and then it got serious. And then we saw Joe Rogan's and all these other higher-end people where you're like, wow, this is like radio. This is like another version of radio. And I think that's the thing that's interesting about when you approached me, it's like, I never thought that there would be a way, and I love doing this, that I would ever make money or broaden my horizons in any way. And then you come along like a light in a dark room and you're like, look, just follow me. I'm going to take you somewhere. And I didn't quite know where it was going to go. And I think that's the thing that's beautiful about this community that you've made, is that you've come in with a very simple idea, but it's also very cutting edge for people like me. And there's a lot of them like me that want to be like, I have to put food on my table, but I want to do what I love. How can I do that? You're really kind of a trendsetter in that notion of getting people to do that.
Yeah, thank you so much for saying that. It seriously means a ton. And like, we did set up to solve like this issue, like I said, and we didn't want it to be like a big, like something crazy, right? Like we obviously have big goals and stuff like that, but we wanted to be, hey, can we just simply put these people together and start making this possible for people who are like doing solo podcasts that want to do interviews or nervous about trying to find guests? Can we help them? And on the flip side, there's people out there with messages, especially during 2020, 2021, that the world like really needed to hear. And it was just like, hey, is there a way we can make it possible for these people to get that word out there? And anyway, yeah, I appreciate you saying all that. And that's exactly what we set out to do. I'm thankful that it's actually delivering well. So thank you.
You know, and I think the one thing I've thought about with this, the pandemic life that we've lived for the last couple of years, and hopefully we really are genuinely coming out and things are opening up and the world's reacting and interacting in ways that I think is a jolt to us, because we're going back to like, wow, things are opening up and we don't have to do things the way we used to do. I don't know that we're going to understand the magnitude of what I broached with you, which I'm surprised is the first time, like podcasting is therapy. Do you think that we're going to be able to really pull back in a macro way and look at this and analyze and say, yeah, this notion of podcasting was probably one of the best things that human beings could have done during this period where we were all disenfranchised and separated because of digital media, but we all got connected because we wanted to hear the story and feel that human connection?
I really hope so. But at the same time, I thought that would have already started happening, but I haven't heard much of that. In my mind, it would be really cool is if somebody, and I'm not like wanting to, I don't think I'm the guy for it, but if somebody would do like a documentary of the impact that podcasting had on people during those years, because it just seems like it's kind of, not that it's been brushed under, but it's just kind of like, all right, business as usual, keep on going, everybody. But I do think that there should be some form of acknowledgement of the impact that it had, but maybe it'll happen. I don't know. But right now, I've not seen anything that's leading me to think that someone's working on that. But again, I think almost like a documentary, whether it's audio or full-on audio video, it would be very interesting to see someone diving into some data around that, like how it actually helped. But again, haven't seen it yet.
You know, it's interesting. I don't know if you've seen this documentary on Netflix about the role of social media and how they'll kind of follow your palate and they'll kind of cater to you. And there's people on the inside from Twitter and Facebook and other companies that say, yeah, this is really something that is much bigger than you can imagine. Like if you get a part of a Facebook group, you're going to get like-minded groups that are going to come after you. And it's kind of this way of like catering to the flavors that you're involved with. And I think that would be kind of the style of this documentary, you know. How do people go out and find these podcasts, and how has it changed their lives? Because I listen to some of these, and there's really raw, wonderful stories that are very intriguing, that are changing people's lives. I mean, people are literally, I mean, from an extreme example of someone being on the ledge of a bridge or walking away and saying, this one episode changed my life, to people being able to find grief counseling and all of these other things. I mean, so again, it goes back to that notion of the therapeutic benefit of a community of people that genuinely want to get the world in a better place.
Yeah, it does, and there's so many little stories like that. And again, I think that, man, it'd be really great to have all that. Maybe not all of them, right? There's too many to count, but finding some really great ones to put into some sort of like mini series, I think it'd be really cool, because I do, like you're saying, I think it was therapeutic. But not seeing many people talk about that yet. Hopefully that'll happen at some point, though.
You know, the thing that's interesting about what you've done with setting up this company is that you did this during a pandemic. And I find my first question to a lot of people is, how did you survive the pandemic and how did it change you? And the thing that's weird to me is that so many people are overwhelmingly positive. Like the world slowed down. They finally had the chance to do what they always wanted to do. They finished a book. They spent time with their family. From your experience of living through that, you know, and it's not taking away from the woe and the things that were negative, but overall, do you see yourself looking at that 2-year time period as silver linings?
I do, and I want to be sensitive saying that, of course, because for many people lost family members, many people got really sick themselves, right? Like I have close friends that they had tragedies in their families and even lost some people. So like I want to be sensitive in saying that. For me, thankfully, my wife and I, in particular, like we're both healthy throughout it and stuff like that. And like we obviously kind of followed the guidelines and stuff, so we were okay. But for me, it was like it gave me the chance to actually start this. And anytime you start a business, like you're biting off a lot. At that point, I still had a corporate job, and that corporate job slowed. Like I was a senior executive in the aerospace industry, so like I still had a full time job, but the amount of work slowed down a lot, and I wasn't necessarily going out, hanging out with friends and stuff like that. So I had the time to do this and to make that transition, which I, weirdly enough, like I by choice left the job in 2020 that was like a 15-year career, and but the doors opened for me, if you will, and I like to be sensitive when I'm saying this, but for me, the silver lining was being able to step into what I think was a great job, or a good job, into like a really great purpose-driven company that I'm now running, and it was a big opportunity for me. And if the timing wasn't during that pandemic, I probably would still be working a corporate job. Like it probably wouldn't have worked out the way it did. And so timing obviously is everything. And there was no way for me to, we started working on this before the pandemic. So there's no way to even have known that that was going to happen when we were getting started or anything like that. But that's when we fast tracked and said, you know what? Let's use all our like paid time off with these companies, because my co-founder worked in a business as well, and just to pursue it. And anyway, that's kind of the way it went. That's what happened.
I'm glad you pointed that out. I didn't want to minimize that at all, because this has been a harrowing,
of course.
You know, and I even noticed, you know, following the world of jazz, you know, there was a lot of really big musicians very early on that caught this, and it was devastating. And, you know, and it's continuing to happen. And I think that's the thing about this that I tiptoe around, is that the cases are still happening. You know, there's still a lot of this that's going on, But at the end of the day, I think the thing too is that people had the chance. I think we've moved so fast as a society and a world that, like, the Venice Canal cleared up. You know, there was, you know, like Albuquerque, the air was finally clean. LA's air got clean. Like, there's things where it's like Mother Nature at some point had that karmic calculator and said, we have to just, like, bring it all in, you know? And hopefully because of that, you know, we all like have had a moment to pause and to figure out what's important. And I think there's a level of that, whether we're conscious or not, that all of us have reevaluated our existences, like you. And now you're doing something you genuinely love that's bringing a lot of good to people.
Yeah, and I think that, like you said, I mean, first off, I feel like the world, like the planet itself, almost like reset, like during that time, right? Like there's all kinds of crazy things that, like, we were just like, wow, we didn't know the air could be clear here. Like, that's a really simple one, but yeah, I mean, I think that it just enabled me to do something, but at the same time, I didn't let it get me down. Like, there was a couple weeks at first where I was like, because I'm a very social person, and at first I was like, man, I'm not seeing any of my people. Like, I haven't left the house in a bit, and that was a lot on me, like, emotionally, mentally, right? But then it just took sitting down, buckling up, saying, you know, I'm not going to let myself fall into any form of depression. Instead, I'm just going to take advantage of it. And it's kind of like one of those things that, like, I'll do the work today so I don't have to do it tomorrow, right? Do today what others won't do so that tomorrow you have what they can't. Going to, like, the Jerry Rice quote, if you will. And I'm paraphrasing that a little bit. But the idea was just like, you know what? I'm going to stay positive. I'm going to do what I feel like I'm supposed to do from a business perspective to serve the world. And I buckled in, and I'll be real, I worked too much during that time. Any good entrepreneur prior to 2020 would tell you that the amount of hours I was putting in and stuff like that was not a healthy choice. But for me, it kept me motivated, sane, right? Like, all those things. So it ended up actually being, in my mind, a bit of a positive. And now I scaled back as soon as things started opening up, and I found a good cadence. I have, like, working hours and stuff like that. But yeah, without that, I don't know where I'd be necessarily. And it would just enabled me to find a way to contribute to the world in a way I never thought I would.
Well, you've had a lot of practice with this. At 10 years old, you're selling golf balls, and I'm curious. So this spirit's been in you for a long time, and I'm sure there's been ebbs and flows. Did you always believe when you were a kid that you were going to grow up and do what you're doing right now? Or did you think you were going to be a fireman or a cop or a baseball player?
The first thing I thought I was going to be is I liked Westerns as a kid. And so all those are set in Texas, right? And so as a kid, my mom asked me, I remember, I don't know how old I was a little boy, and she asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up, and I said I wanted to move to Texas and be a cowboy. And I was devastated to find out that they also had cars and electricity and all of that, because I assumed I'd be able to move there and actually be one of those people I was watching on TV. Anyway, that was my first realization that, no, this isn't real life. So after that short devastation, which obviously is now like a really funny thing, I was kind of strange as a kid, and I mean that from the regard of I was very self-aware for, like, 8 to 10-year-old kid, realizing that I wasn't good at things that many of my friends were. So, like, an example, a lot of my friends were good at sports, or they were good at school, or they were good at video games, and all my younger brothers, I have 3 younger brothers, they were musicians. Like, from the time that they were real little kids, they just understood they could sit behind these, like, a piano or a guitar, and they could just play it. And I just never had any of that gifting. I always found that to be odd. And I remember one day I found across the street in our neighborhood, like from our neighbor, there was a golf course, and there was a golf ball out there. We were always playing the golf course, even though we weren't supposed to. But I picked up this golf ball because I never actually, like, held one before, I guess. And this golfer rides by on a golf cart and goes, "Hey kid, what does that golf ball say on it?" And I, like, read it. I was like, "Titleist Pro V1." He goes, "I'll give you $3 for it." And so I gave him the ball. He gave me $3, and, like, a light bulb went off. For the first time in my life, I felt like I found something that I was like, "This is interesting," and. So I just talked to my brothers and some of my neighborhood friends. I was like, "Let's go through these lakes and see if we can find more golf balls. We'll clean them up, and we'll see if we can sell them." And we did that. And like I said, for the first time, I felt like, wow, I'm good at this business thing. Like, this makes sense to me. And that kind of set a spark at that young age of, this is what I like to do. That was a fun thing for me. To some people, it probably felt like work. But to me, I was like, this is rewarding. I really just enjoyed the act of doing it all. Like, I didn't even necessarily care about the money as much as some people probably would. It obviously, we're thinking about the candy they could buy and all that, but I more so just like the art of designing the whole system of, you go look for balls, this person cleans them, this person sells them, and then this person, like, distributes the money for all 5 of us that are doing this type of thing. Anyway, it sounds weird, like, that being me as a 10-year-old, but it really did kind of set me into this understanding of, I'm going to be doing something like this for the rest of my life and enjoying it.
That sounds totally, absolutely plausible. I mean, kids sell the craziest things in the world. There was a kid, I think, when we were a kid, and this is the 80s, though, and I think he brought garden snakes to school, which obviously was totally, you know, couldn't do that, but that's what he was doing. But kids do that stuff all the time. So, you know, I'm thinking with you being as highly motivated as you are, sometimes we're only as good as those mentors and the heroes that we have in our lives. Who's that been for you? Who's been a bedrock for you?
you know, there have been so many people. I mean, I would definitely not be here if it weren't for a whole handful of people. And I'll go through a couple of them if you're okay with that.
Yeah.
The first one would, from that young age, my father, my dad, he was just very supportive of anything that we wanted to do. He was an entrepreneur himself. And when I mentioned, hey, I sold a golf ball today, I think I want to find more and try to sell them, he's like, let me know how I can help. Like, what do you want me to do? And very supportive, very smart in that area. So from day one, my dad has been a huge help to me. He's the person that I also decided to seek advice with when I was deciding to leave that corporate job. So I between all this entrepreneurship, if you will, I had a corporate job for 15 years, and he was the first phone call I made. I was like, hey, I think I'm going to step out and do my own thing. And I didn't know what to expect when I called him. And he's like, it's the best time ever to do that. He goes, you're smart. You've got a plan. And he's like, you should leave immediately. Basically, obviously within reason. But my dad would be the first person I mentioned. In addition, there's been a few times that, I've like all entrepreneurs or anyone in business, we've had those ebbs and flows that you're talking about, the failures along the way. I got into real estate at a young age, and that was, my first big failure, if you will, because of the economy back in 2007. Taking a bad turn, but it made me a little bit scarred and turned out lacking courage. And one of the reasons I stayed in corporate for so long is because I realized now that I was lacking courage. And the person who really taught me that is I picked up Brendan Burchard's book, High Performance Habits, and thinking I was a high performer, I'm like, I'll probably just get a good refresh on this. He goes through 7 habits, and one of them I was missing, which was courage. And so I always like to give credit back to Brendan Burchard, because it showed me that, you know what, I need to step up. I need to take courage. And to me, courage simply means being afraid than doing what you have to do anyway. The day I left that corporate job was a scary day for me, but I knew it was the right move. I was sacrificing the good for the sake of potential great. And again, I want to give credit to Brendan Burchard for that. And last person I'll mention is Michael Hyatt. I've always loved things online. I didn't know anything about it the first time I picked up a computer, how to do a blog, how to do any of this stuff. But Michael Hyatt has been very transparent with sharing his journey. And so I just followed his podcast, I followed his blog, all that, and it just really taught me a lot. So those are kind of 3 people that I'll mention there.
You know, the one thing that's intriguing to me about the spirit that you have as an entrepreneur, and it's very evident, is that, you know, when you're younger, you hear, you got to fail, or you got to fall down. And when you're a kid, you're like, I don't want to do that. You know, you just, it's inherently a reaction to not wanting to get into something negative. But that's something that you do as an entrepreneur, and you embrace that. How hard was that notion to grab, embrace, and like you said, leaving a corporate job or taking a chance and getting a loan to operate a business? How do you get to that point where that's an urge in you that you say, you know what, I'm jumping out of the airplane, I'm good? How did you develop that?
Yeah, it's such an important question, Jess. I'm glad that you brought this one up. It's one of those things that, for me, it takes a little bit of self-reflection, to think about where I am, where I want to go, right? And I think that too many of us, we just kind of run through the day and through our lives without, actually sitting back to reflect and think about that stuff. And that takes intentionality. There's never just a day where, you know what, I'm going to sit back and think about my life instead of turn on the TV, right? You actually have to make the commitment to say, you know what, I'm going to sit down and think about this, where I've come from, where I'm at today. And a lot of us, if we do this, some people don't do it because they're scared of what they're going to discover about themselves. And I didn't know that people feared that until I started asking people. Why don't you just I'm really afraid of what might come up if I sit down in my own thoughts. And so I encourage people, though, do it. You don't want to go through life being scared of yourself. Let's put it that way. And I think more of us are than we're willing to admit. And so for me, I just came to terms with the fact that I've got to listen to what I'm feeling. And so for me, all these changes along the way, deciding to get a corporate job was one of those things where I had to sit back and acknowledge the fact that I was scared of what was happening in real estate. I was scared of what's happening in the world, and I wanted a more comfortable job. And as we were getting this down, maybe I didn't stretch myself enough, but that was the self-reflection I had even at that point. And when it came to doing what I'm doing now, so stepping out of a corporate job, which, by the way, after 15 years, no matter how high up you are, there's some perks to a job at that point, right? So it's not just the paycheck you're giving up. It's all the comfort that you have. Well, I sat down and thought about it at this point. It was actually year 12 of my career. It took me a few failures to actually find something to get me out of it. But it just took that self-reflection, sitting down and thinking, hey, what is it that I really want in life? Where is it that I want to go? What contribution do I want to have to others' lives? And it just, for me, was writing that stuff down. And it, it, it just grew. It turned into a passion, turned something that, that made me say to myself, I need to show up in a way that I can really serve people on a higher level. And I know that I'm supposed to do that. And then I was just looking at the areas that I was succeeding in. Like, what was I good at? I was podcasting at that point. I was good at it. And I really enjoyed it. And that's what kind of opened those doors. So for me, all of it started from a place of self-reflection. And John, I don't know if that really answers the question. If not, feel free to rephrase it so I can dive in a little bit deeper.
No, you did. You got the spirit of what I find intriguing about an entrepreneur, and it's that it's exactly the way you described it. You know, the one thing that you get to do is not only do you get to run this business that fosters all of like people like me that get to do this, but you also are on that end of it where you get to interview people. Who's your dream interview? Who's the one person on the planet that you would just love at some point in your career to have a good podcast conversation with?
Yeah, I referenced Michael Hyatt, Brendan Burchard. Those are two people that I've always looked up to. I've had the opportunity to meet Michael Hyatt, have him on the show, and been able to stay in touch with him, which has been really great. Brendan Burchard is one that I've never been able to like find access to, if you will. But that's, again, another person that's just kind of been a hero in my life, if you will. And I think it'd be a really great conversation. I think we'd have a really great conversation together. So that would be, I'll say Brendan Burchard would be one. Now, obviously, there's like super interesting, I'm a music. I love music. I don't play, but I love music. There's a lot of musicians I'd love to chat with. There's probably some celebrities out there as well. But just thinking about like strictly my entrepreneurial venture, what would I think I'd be able to show up with to add value in an interview? I'd say Brendan Burchard would be the person.
So let's say tonight you have a dream and your 10-year-old version sitting there in your room throwing a golf ball in the air, and you can give that 10-year-old version of you a piece of advice. And this isn't about regret. It's about you accumulating the wisdom of living every day on this planet up to this point. What would you tell your younger version? What advice would you give that 10-year-old boy?
To make more room for creativity. And I say that because I'll actually go back to a poll that was done, and I think, I'm blanking on who it was exactly. I think it was Convince and Convert was the company that did this poll, but they interviewed 1,000 kids going into kindergarten and asked them, do you think that you're creative? 98% said, yes, I'm very creative. They polled 1,000 seniors in high school getting ready to graduate and asked them, do you think you're creative? 2% of them said yes. And what I find interesting about that and about this idea of creativity is that it actually is a muscle. And if you are not using it, then you lose it, just like anything else. And it can come back at any point if you start being creative. But if I go back to my younger self, I would say remain creative. Do things that people think are weird, but as long as they're creative and kind of flex that muscle, I don't think there's a way to lose, because creativity is always what changes the world, makes it a better place. And if I go back to that younger self, I'd say never lose that. Not that I ever fully did, but imagine if I'd been working that muscle out for all those years instead of just more recent years. I think that'd be even further along in helping people in a bigger way. So I think that's the advice I'd give, is to remain creative and flex that muscle.
I love that answer, man. I've had a lot of answers to this, and that's so good. And I think about years ago, I remember hearing about how they would have senior citizens paint, and they would do watercolors, and it would completely keep them vital and young and help their synapses and all of those things fire in very healthy ways. And it's so true, because you do. It's like the older you get, you start putting all these walls up around you. You start getting more careful and all of that. And the thing about musicians and artists and all of that is there's that reckless spirit, which is like an entrepreneur, where it's like, I'm going for it. You know, no matter what happens, I may succeed, I may fail, but it's keeping that spirit that keeps you alive.
Yeah, for me, I actually, when it comes to creativity, every morning I spend 15 minutes writing down a random idea. And usually I try to make it have no connection to what I actually do. Like, I mean, a random idea that's probably, I'll say this, 99 of the 100 pages in this book are totally weird, total garbage, like you never use them, but that's not the point. The point is that I'm flexing that creative muscle and coming up with an idea for how to make a better app for getting from A to B when you're driving, right? Like a better GPS app. Like, nothing I'm ever going to do. It doesn't even interest me. But the idea was just, can I stretch my creative muscle to think differently than the world is thinking right now? And I think that if all of us took that small piece of advice and just did 15 minutes a day, you'd be shocked at the random ideas and solutions you come up with when somebody presents a problem to you. You might be able to say, you know what, off the cusp, here's an idea that I had. And he'll be like, wow, that's amazing. I never thought about that. And really, it's just you being creative and operating in that lane.
And how many of those things did we see, like the dad in Gremlins, that would just have this idea?
Yeah.
You know, and it would just
What a great reference.
Yeah. I got a few more questions for you, Alex, and this is the one that's always referenced as the therapy question. And everyone has a perception of you. Your family, your friends, everybody that is a part of the PodMatch PodPros community, your colleagues, but ultimately you're driving your life. You have a perception of you. What's your perception of you? Who do you think you are?
First and foremost, I always like to throw my faith in there. So I've at my early 20s, I end up in a church randomly, which is a long story, but just kind of ended up there and found faith in Jesus. And so first and foremost, I really like devote the fact that I am a person of service to what I've just read through the pages of the Bible. So, and without preaching, that's just been a very important part of my life. So first and foremost, I'm a servant of people. I'm there to love and support those around me, and I'm just following the example I saw Jesus set. So I think that's the first thing that I'd say about myself. Aside from that, like I think it's just really important for us to be empathetic toward other people. And we kind of talked about that early on, but being empathetic towards others in the world has been a really important part of my life, and I believe that's at my core who I really am, is to show up in a way that I hear someone's story, and instead of getting mad because I'm like, man, this person doesn't agree with me, or I think that they're stupid because they think that, right? Instead, it's saying, okay, what in their life has caused them to think that way, and what can I learn from that? How can I show up in a loving way to support that person? And so those are two areas that I just think that, like, being a person of service and being somebody who can, like, be empathetic and almost put myself in someone else's shoes are two things that have really been pillars in my life that help define who I am. Aside from that, there's you know, the obvious. Like, I love my family, love my wife, love my friends and stuff like that, and here to really support the podcasting space. But that's just kind of who I am in a nutshell, if you will.
I touched on this in the beginning, but I'm going to kind of illuminate it a little bit more to kind of bring everything full circle here. You know, you reached out to me in a very simple email. I responded. Since June, I've seen just this community and everything kind of just grow in a wonderful way. And I'm curious, for anybody that's listening to this, that's curious about you and your business model and podcasting and just sharing story, how can they learn more about PodMatch, PodPros, what you're doing, and you know, kind of being a bridge to that email that you sent me? How can they get involved and learn more about you and what you're doing?
Yeah, thanks for asking this question. Everything I do is at podpros.com, so podpros.com. Literally has links to PodMatch, to all the other services we provide, and everything we will provide at any point. And also from there, you can find all the social links and stuff like that. Literally, however you reach out, you'll end up talking to me if you ask for me. We do have a team at this point, but if you're saying, hey, I'm looking for Alex, or you might just reach out to me, and it might be me who responds. But I'm always down to have a conversation with anybody and just to hear where people are at, because one thing I'll say, podcasting is not like the perfect medium for everybody. So somebody's like having a question, like I said, just feel free to reach out. I'm definitely here to help out and serve however I can. But yeah, I appreciate you asking that, Joe. Like, podpros.com is where everything is at that I do. It's kind of the hub.
So you mentioned music. I got to know, at this point in your life, and it can fluctuate throughout your life, at this point in juncture of us speaking here in September 2022, what's a song? What's kind of the soundtrack for you right now?
I feel like I'm a music junkie. So like I've always got something, but you're right. There's always something that's kind of coming through. I've been circling back to some 80s music. And so I was born in 88. So like I was more of a 90s baby, right? But like, I guess my family, my parents were still listening to 80s music. So as a kid, like that's what I feel like I kind of like grew up with. So I've been going back and listening to a bit of that. I don't even know if I can identify a single artist. I've just been like some of that like mid to late 80s music I've just been really enjoying again for some reason. Like, and then there's a whole group of like, I don't even call it other than like retro remakes of some of these songs I've really enjoyed, or just like music that's coming out that has like an 80s sound to it. So I know it's kind of general, but I've really just been really enjoying that sound recently.
A good friend of mine who, the reason why I got into journalism and eventually podcasting, we live in the same city here. It's Lee's Summit. It's a suburb of Kansas City. It's actually the home of Pat Metheny. So every time I bring that up to a musician, I could write a book on Pat Metheny. I get so many stories. Well, he kind of, you know, just on a whim said, do you remember the band Us Three? And it was like a late 80s, early 90s band. And they would take all of these like different pieces of jazz and hip hop, you know, like early hip hop and all of this, and they'd mix it up. And I actually got to interview the brainchild of it. His name is Jeff Wilkinson. And when you said the 80s and that kind of era, it kind of reminded me of that. And it's amazing how music has evolved so much over time, like from that late 80s standpoint, because I'm an 80s baby, like how we've evolved and how we've gotten to the point of where we're at right now and just where we're going to go. It's the ever-evolving language that all of us can understand on this planet.
I couldn't agree more. Like there's something about the sound, obviously, that provides a feeling, which I love. And I this is poor form. You're not supposed to do this when you're doing a podcast, but I wrote down the name of the artist, so I'm going to look that up as well. One I'll mention, just like you got me thinking, one that I didn't listen to as a kid, I didn't find until during the pandemic, was the group called Asia. I don't even know if they're truly an 80s band or not, but they kind of have that sound. Thoroughly enjoying like basically anything that they have released, I just think is incredible. So I've been listening to a lot of Asia's, like one that's like been kind of a pillar. I first heard them actually during the Olympics, and I think it was during 2020, maybe, yeah, I think it was 2020 or 2021 at some point. Whenever the Olympics did happen, it was just like I was watching something. They had a song by Asia, like I think it was Heat of the Moment, playing in the background. I was just like, what is that song? I pulled up and asked, and I looked up everything by that artist, and I fell in love. So anyway, that's kind of one to throw out there.
Yeah, they're wonderful. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and there was so many good things that were going on during that point. Alex, hey man, this has been wonderful. I just want to thank you for reaching out to me with that simple email. It's turned into wonderful things. Thank you for the work that you're doing, and it really is a thrill and an honor to be able to catch up with you and to kind of pick your brain a little bit and talk about, you know, the world of podcasting in your life.
Yeah, Joe, thank you again for the opportunity and for the kind words. Seriously, it means so much. I never know what I'm going to get when I do like a cold outreach, but sometimes I just hear I listen to the voice first off. So like I hear a voice, I'm like, especially like you've, like I said, you've got a voice for this stuff. And then I just kind of saw the angle you're taking. I'm like, this is somebody I want to reach out to. And yeah, you never know what you're going to get, but I just appreciate your kindness and just the contribution you're making to your part, your side of the world, right? Like what you're doing. So thank you so much. Again, it means a lot.
Absolutely. Well, it's a part of the risk that you're talking about. It's like, I'm starting to, as I get older, I'll be 50 here in about a month, and I'm getting to that point where it's like you have to get to the edge of that airplane and you just got to jump, you know, because
right,
you just don't have a lot of time, and why not just give a shot? So thank you very much, Alex. Keep doing the great work out there. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in to another famous interview with Joe Domino, where we cover the world of art, literature, podcasting, and music around the globe. If you want to hear more interviews, visit the Famous Interviews with Joe Domino YouTube channel. Thanks again for listening, and until next time.